I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israel said Sunday it is targeting the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah's financial arm with a new wave of strikes in Beirut. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Speaking in a news briefing, Israeli military spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari said Israel plans to target Hezbollah financial institutions in Beirut. After days of strikes that have pummeled the Lebanese capital and southern Lebanon, Hagari warned Lebanese citizens to stay clear of Hezbollah's financial institutions as Israel plans to heavily attack them. The scope of the new Israeli evacuation warnings was not immediately clear. Israel's announcement came a day after U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin called civilian casualties in Lebanon far too high and urged Israel to scale back some strikes, especially in and around Beirut. I'm Karen Chamas.
Pro-Russian bloggers say Moscow's forces are fighting street-to-street battles with Ukrainian troops in the outskirts of the eastern Ukrainian town of Selidov as Russia's forces push to gain control over the whole Donbas region. Open source data shows Russian forces, which President Vladimir Putin ordered into Ukraine in February 2022, advanced in September at their fastest rate since March 2022, despite Ukraine taking a part of Russia's Kursk region. The thrust of the Russian advance over recent months has been in eastern Ukraine's Donbas region, over which Putin says he wants to gain full control. In recent weeks, Russia has surrounded towns in Donetsk region and then slowly constricted them until Ukrainian units are forced to withdraw. Bloggers saying they are doing the same to Selidov, which had a pre-war population of over 20,000. This is VOA News. Residents of Iraq's semi-autonomous northern Kurdish region went to the polls in long-awaited parliamentary elections under the shadow of ongoing rivalries, economic instability, and unresolved disputes with Baghdad. The primary competitors in Sunday's vote were two dominant Kurdish parties, the Kurdistan Democratic Party and the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. The two parties have historically controlled different parts of the region. This division has frequently led to political deadlock. The parliamentary elections were originally set for 2022. They were postponed several times due to disputes over the election law and procedures. Two prominent opposition party officials were gunned down Saturday in Mozambique's capital days before the results of the country's disputed elections are expected. Charles Manguero reports from Maputo.
Eyewitnesses report that gunmen ambushed the car that opposition lawyer Elvino Diaz and party officials Paulo Guambe were traveling in Saturday. Diaz was a legal advisor to Venancio Mondlane and the People Optimistic for the Development of Mozambique or Podemos Party. The killings prompted condemnations in Mozambique and abroad. In a joint statement, the United States Embassy, the Canadian High Commission, the Norwegian Embassy, the Swiss Embassy, and the United Kingdom High Commission expressed their deep condolences to the families of the victims and strongly condemned the murders. Preliminary results from the country's general elections held on October 9 show presidential candidate Daniel Chapo of the ruling Front for the Liberation of Mozambique, or Frelimo Party, on course to win the vote. Chapo's closest rival, Venancio Mondlane, ran as an independent but was supported by Podemos. Mondlane claims the election was marred by fraud and manipulation by Frelimo. The final election results could be announced Thursday and Chapo is expected to win. Charles Manguiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Hurricane Oscar has made landfall in eastern Cuba, an island troubled by a massive power outage. The National Hurricane Center in Miami says the storm center arrived in the Cuban province of Guantanamo near the city of Baraco on Sunday evening. Oscar made landfall on Great Anagua Island in the Bahamas early Sunday. It is expected to produce significant coastal flooding there and in other areas of the southeastern Bahamas. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, October 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There's a call for a nationwide demonstration today in Mozambique following the assassinations of two senior opposition figures.
Eyewitnesses report that gunmen ambushed the car that opposition lawyer Elvino Diaz and party officials Paulo Gwambe were traveling in Saturday.
Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says one of its female officials was abducted over the weekend. Liberia's anti-corruption commission will investigate allegations of bribery to remove the Speaker of the House of Representatives. A program targets Nigerian women and youth to ease worsening economic burden. Kenya's impeached deputy president says two assassination attempts have been made on his life.
The deputy president made serious allegations about two assassination attempts against his life. He also said that his security has been withdrawn.
And Trump-Harris campaign rhetoric heats up. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Prominent opposition party officials were gunned down on Saturday in Mozambique's capital Maputo, days before the results of the country's disputed elections are expected. Charles Maguiro reports from Maputo.
Eyewitnesses report that gunmen ambushed the car that opposition lawyer Elvino Diaz and party officials Paulo Gwambe were traveling in Saturday. Diaz was a legal advisor to Venancio Mondlane and the People Optimistic for the Development of Mozambique or Podemos Party. Mozambique Minister of Interior, Pascoal Ronda, confirmed the murders of both men, adding that police launched a manhunt. The government urges the relevant institutions, particularly the National Criminal Investigation Service and the Police of the Republic of Mozambique, to calmly clarify these cases and ensure that their actors are brought to justice and held responsible for their heinous act. The killings prompted condemnations in Mozambique and abroad. In a joint statement, the United States Embassy, the Canadian High Commission, the Norwegian Embassy, the Swiss Embassy, and the United Kingdom High Commission expressed their deep condolences to the families of the victims and strongly condemned the murders. Anti-corruption advocate and director of the Center for Democracy and Human Rights in Mozambique, Adriano Novunga, says the murders are aimed at creating chaos. It is an attack on democracy and an attack on a democratic rule of law and an attack on each and every one of us who believe in the fight for electoral justice in Mozambique. Preliminary results from the country's general elections held on October 9 show presidential candidate Daniel Chapo of the ruling Front for the Liberation of Mozambique or Frelimo Party on course to win the vote. Chapo's closest rival, Venancio Mondlane, ran as an independent but was supported by Podemos. Mondlane claims the election was marred by fraud and manipulation by Frelimo. Diaz was preparing to challenge the results of the Constitutional Council when they were announced this week. Mondlane had called for a national strike on Monday, October 21st, in protest of election rigging. On Saturday in Maputo, Mondlane said the shutdown will go ahead despite the death of Diaz and Gwambe. I would first like to declare that we will maintain the strike more than ever for Monday. This is more than clear, but now we will have a different character. We are not going to stay home with our hands folded. For this strike, no one will ask for permission from any municipality and there is no need. Demonstration is a constitutional right and exempt from authorization. No one should authorize us to demonstrate. Therefore, we will maintain the strike in the sense of that there is no work, public or private. The shootings are widely viewed in Mozambique as politically motivated. Police spokesperson Lionel Mushina said the victims were killed after leaving a local bar and added the attack might be related to interactions the men had with other patrons. Charles Manguiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
It appears Kenyans will have to wait a while before their newly nominated deputy president will be sworn in. President William Ruto nominated Professor Kithure Kindiki to replace Rigathi Gachagua, but Gachagua got a reprieve after the court suspended his impeachment. Meanwhile, Gachagua, who had been in the hospital, was discharged on Sunday. He revealed at a news conference on Sunday that two assassination attempts had been made on his life. Political reporter Barack Odua of the People Daily explains the new developments to me.
On Sunday, former Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua left hospital in Nairobi. He got discharged, but he had to address journalists at the hospital. For the first time since he got into office, he opened a lead on the frosty relationship between him and President William Ruto. The deputy president made serious allegations about two assassination attempts against his life. He also said that his security has been withdrawn, both at his residences in Nairobi and in the hub country. The deputy president also went further to say that should anything happen to him or any member of his family, then the blame should squarely lie on President William Ruto.
What happens now to the trial in the Senate, whether he should now officially be removed? Where are we?
As you can be aware that the deputy president, Rigathi Gachagua, ran to court to stop his impeachment by the Senate. His claim at the court is that the impeachment process was done unprocedurally, illegally, and unconstitutionally. He wants the court to reverse the decisions of the Senate to impeach him. So court decided to halt the process of having him impeached. The courts also say that the new selected deputy president, Professor Kithure Kindiki, should not be sworn in. Remember, the swearing in of Professor Kithure Kindiki was planned for Saturday, but it was stopped by the courts. We are expecting a serious legal battle between lawyers of the Senate and the legal counsels of the deputy president as from Tuesday.
So Kenya is celebrating Mashujaa Day. Can you tell us what exactly is it?
Yes, Kenya on Sunday was marking Mashujaa Day. Mashujaa is a Kiswahili word that means heroes. Those people who are deemed to have fought for the liberation of Kenya as a country. Remember, Kenya got its independence in 1963 from the British.
Barack Odua is the political reporter for the People Daily of Kenya. He was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says a female official of the party was abducted over the weekend by unidentified individuals. A month ago, Mohamed Ali Kibayo, a member of the Chadema secretariat, was abducted and his body was later found in the Dar es Salaam neighborhood. John Mrema is Chadema's director of protocol, communications and foreign affairs. He tells me that Aisha Manchano, the national publicity secretary of Chadema's women's wing, was abducted and severely beaten.
Yesterday in the afternoon, our women wing leader, who she's a publicity secretary for the national women wing, she was abducted in the afternoon and she was beaten. Seven people who appeared to her told her that they were police without even showing their identity cards, arrested her and put her in their car. And then they just went through to the bushes and she was beaten severely. And she was beaten and she was asked, why did she had a press conference for the women wing and decided to burn the Samia Suluhu's clothes, which she, Samia did give to Chadema women wing in the year 2023 during the Women Days, World Women Days in Kilimanjaro. So that was the reason she was beaten that much. And she was informed that if she could hold any press conference and showed up her body to the public that how severely she was beaten, then these people, they will go after her.
Did Chadema complain or report this to the police? And what did the police say?
We don't know how much time do they need to investigate this matter, because this matter has been reported to the police, and the police, they have issued a statement today late in the evening that they have started their investigation, but we are not sure how much time do they need to investigate this matter.
Has the government released the report of the kidnapping and murder of one of your members, Mohamed Kibayo, last month? Has that report been released?
Let me start by saying that the investigation about Ali Mohamed Kibao, who was abducted and thrown out of the bus he was traveling to, the president ordered an investigation, and she ordered that she needed an immediate investigation and a report. Since that day, we have not heard anything from the security organs, from the government about Ali Mohamed Kibao. Nobody is saying anything. So we know nothing, nor any public reports to the moment who were involved in this killing of Ali Mohamed Kibao.
John Murema is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, October 21st. And for more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Liberia's Anti-Corruption Commission, the LACC, says it will investigate allegations of bribery to overthrow the Speaker of the House of Representatives, J. Fonati Kofa. LACC Chairperson Alexandra Cormanzo says Liberian laws prohibit public servants from soliciting and receiving bribes. She tells me that anyone found culpable will be prosecuted irrespective of their official status.
On Thursday, October 17, a civil society organization called Civil Society Working Group of Liberia Incorporated officially complained to the LACC about allegation of bribery in the House of Representatives. Immediately, we put our investigators on it, and then we begin to see videos circulating on social media with claims and counterclaims of alleged bribery to remove the speaker. The LACC has taken seize of the matter, and basically we've been doing our own assessment so that by Monday we'll be able to come up with an official statement to the public. So yes, this is a major, major concern. It's very concerning. For the past month, there has been a lot of different cases involving alleged acts of corruption that the LACC has taken seize of. And we are definitely going to investigate and bring persons of interest. We're going to bring them to the LACC for investigation. And if it is established that there are acts of corruption involved, we'll proceed to prosecution.
What and who are you going to be investigating? The source of the so-called corruption or bribery money, or those who received it?
It's a combination. The issue of bribery. Bribery comes with the giver and the receiver. The giver and the receiver both, you know, will be held criminally. So we have our own way of investigating. First and foremost, we're going to investigate the source of the funding. Once we establish that indeed there was a funding that was released and we established the source, then we'll begin to also look at people in videos, because there was video evidence. We'll begin to call those people in to be able to understand exactly what transpired.
If the allegation turns out to be true, Madam, or all of those who received the alleged payout would have violated Liberian law, as you said, what exactly are the consequences?
Under Chapter 5.1 or Section 5.2 of the LACC Act, it says the LACC has the right to investigate all acts of corruption, irrespective of the office or status of the person involved. This is something that we are going to go through the process. The whole issue of investigation is the entire process. And then given the fact that in the legislature, which is the first branch of government, we are going to also proceed with the investigation in keeping with the law.
Councillor Alessandra Cuomo is the chair of the Liberia Anti-Corruption Commission. She was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A World Bank report says half of Nigeria's estimated 300 million population now live below the poverty line. Experts describe this as a once-in-a-generation crisis. Acting Director General of the Nigerian American Chamber of Commerce, Wofai Samuel, tells viewers Chinedu Ofor that the organization has a program targeting women and youth as part of efforts to ease worsening economic burden.
Almost no job opportunities for Nigerian citizens. Every other day, companies, organizations are getting workers laid off, especially with the advent of technology. And then you also look at inflation. Inflation is something that has played a very critical role. Generally, I would say that the situation right now in Nigeria is not a very conducive one. Everyone is feeling the hardship comparable to the economic statistics.
The president of Nigeria is asking for organizations to do whatever they can to assist in the economy. Does the chamber have any policy, or are you implementing any at the moment?
We've put together a few strategies that have been very favorable for women, and we continue to push these strategies. So we have a lot of capacity building workshops. We have lots of networking opportunities and events, and we get to hire majority of our vendors from the informal sector. So from people who produce awards, to people who produce brochures, to photographers, these are all people from the informal sectors. As much as we can, we try to allocate these contracts to women who have capacity, who are working across these lines and value chains, who are properly equipped with the skill to deliver on the job. So instead of men, we'd rather hire women. And then instead of hiring people who are older, we'd rather hire people who are younger. That way, we're taking more people off the streets, creating more informal jobs, and ensuring that there's food on people's tables one step at a time, directly or indirectly. So I would round off by saying that in addition to initiatives like this, palliatives have been provided by several organizations as a form of their corporate social responsibility. The Nigerian American Chamber of Commerce intends to keep up with that, get sponsors, get partners who can work with us to ensure that we're able to provide as minimum as food for the lowest underserved communities, the lowest underserved population. So
economists are talking about agriculture as an impetus to growing not just wealth, but also food. Through the chamber, are you engaging any agricultural policies, or either through the AGOA, are you making opportunities available?
With respect to agriculture, yes, indeed. We organize some capacity building workshops and trainings for people who are interested in agriculture and people who are already working in the agriculture value chain. And some of the excuses and complaints that we've had so far are the fact that agriculture in Nigeria is not very attractive. We practice more of small-scale agriculture instead of mechanized agriculture, large-scale agriculture. So they've been complaining about lack of modernized tools, lack of electricity to store their produce. As you already know, majority of the produce from this country, from sub-Saharan Africa, gets spoiled on the way. They get damaged and bad even before they get to the final destination of for sale.
That's the Acting Director General of the Nigerian American Chamber of Commerce, Wofai Samuel, speaking from Lagos with viewers Chinedu Ofor. Recent comments by former President Donald Trump about the U.S. having a, quote, enemy within that needs to be dealt with have sparked a new wave of criticism by his opponents. But the heated rhetoric that both the Republican and Democratic presidential nominees use on the campaign trail comes with a warning from analysts that it may hurt their chances to win the White House. Viewers Veronica Bolderas Iglesias explains.
With early voting underway in several states, Vice President and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris addressed reporters Saturday, intensifying her criticism of her political opponent, former President Donald Trump.
Donald Trump has proven himself to be increasingly unstable and unfit.
Harris has described Trump with those words repeatedly since the Republican presidential nominee made controversial remarks on Fox News on October 13th when interviewed about a potential second term in the White House. Trump was asked how he'd guard against bureaucrats undermining him. He replied, quote, "We have the outside enemy, and then we have the enemy from within." He added, "We have some sick people, radical left lunatics, and it should be very easily handled by, if necessary, by National Guard, or if really necessary, by the military. Trump later clarified he was referring to his Democratic opponents, but repeated similar claims when interviewed on October 16th by the Wall Street Journal. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, a Republican, was asked on ABC's This Week show to share his opinion on Trump's remarks.
Nobody likes that type of stuff and that type of hyperbole, but let's look. He was president for 4 years. Did he go after his political enemies? I don't think he's going to go and weaponize. He didn't do it the first term. He's not going to necessarily do it this term.
The increasingly heated rhetoric used by both presidential candidates to blast each other isn't necessarily a winning formula to sway votes, political analyst Shannon O'Brien told VOA. O'Brien is an associate professor of instruction in the government department at the University of Texas, Austin. She was interviewed via Zoom.
I think it has the potential to be problematic if you go over the line and you disgust people who are kind of in the middle. I think there might be some people that stay home and cross their arms and are just fed up with the entire process.
O'Brien says there are few undecided voters at this stage of the race, but the campaigns aren't ready to give up on winning them over. Trump is scheduled to hold campaign events in North Carolina, Georgia, and Nevada this week. Harris, who turned 60 on Sunday, is expected to hold a series of moderated conversations Monday alongside former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan in a bid to earn the support of swing voters, according to a campaign media advisory. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with cricket. As South Africa women cricket national team, the Proteas, lost the Women's T20 World Cup to New Zealand, who were crowned surprise champions of the Women's T20 World Cup with a comprehensive 32-run win over South Africa in Dubai on Sunday. For the first time this year, the International Cricket Council introduced equal prize money for its men's and women's tournaments. New Zealand will take home $2.34 million, with South Africa taking $1.7 million in prize money. Captain Laura Wolverdet of South Africa reflects on her country's T20 World Cup journey.
At first we thought we could ride the wave a bit, maybe score a few wickets here or there, but they just kept going. Probably let them score a few too many, and it put a lot of pressure on us with the bat.
Cameroon's Francis Ngannou made a triumphant return to mixed martial arts by knocking out Renan Ferreira in the first round of their heavyweight clash at a Professional Fighters League event dubbed Battle of the Giants in the early hours of Sunday morning. After some early heavy kicks from both fighters, Ngannou, who had not fought in mixed martial arts since January 2022, took the fight to the mat and eventually got behind his Brazilian opponent, landing a series of bludgeoning punches to end the fight with 88 seconds left in the first round. A tearful Ngannou then dedicated his victory to the memory of his 15-month-old son, Kobe, who died in April 2024.
I can't just think about anything than my son Kobe, you know. I only take this fight because of him. I wanted to fight for him. But about that. And I'm done. So I don't know. I hope they can remember his name, because without Kobe, we wouldn't be here tonight. I wouldn't have fight. But thank you everyone for coming.
In beach soccer, the Confederation of African Football Beach Soccer Africa Cup of Nations Egypt 2024 got underway on Saturday with exciting matches in Group A. Host Egypt got off to a flying start in Hurghada after they overcame Ghana 6-3, while Morocco secured a 4-3 victory over Tanzania. In Sunday's matches, Dabotan Mauritania stunned African champions and tournament favorites Senegal 5-2 in their Group B opener. The match between Mozambique and Malawi ended 4-3 in favor of Mozambique. In today's matches, Morocco will face Ghana. It will be Egypt versus Tanzania. Senegal will battle Malawi, while Mozambique will play Mauritania. In motorsports, Kenyan driver Karan Patel and his co-driver Tausif Khan have retained the Rwanda Mountain Gorilla Rally title following the 3-stage victory in Bugesera on Sunday. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that is it for this Monday, October 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Botte in Washington.